Welcome to the James and Kim cast. We really appreciate you listening. Remember, you can share us with your friends. We'd appreciate that. And interact with us on social media as well. Now, before we get started, let's talk about the gig available thanks to our sponsors at EPP Fiber Optics. It's the fastest internet around and the best value in town at only $67.99 a month.
Do you recognize this theme song right here?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah, The Godfather, The Godfather. We've got our very dear friend, Linda Moss Mines, local historian on the James and Kim cast. Hello, Linda.
Good morning.
You know, we get so many compliments on our podcast when you're our special guest. I just want you to know that.
Well, you are so sweet to say that. That makes me feel great that there are people out there that like nerdy historians.
Well, you've got so much information, and you always make the story so great.
Okay,
we just love having you on.
Yeah. So, all right, Linda, I should have prefaced this before I said, do you recognize this theme song, the Godfather theme song? And then I introduced you.
So, she's the godfather, the godmother of Chattanooga.
I'm sorry, Linda.
Offer you can't refuse.
The reason why we're playing this theme song, we're going to be talking about Jimmy Hoffa and also Al Capone and their ties to Chattanooga. But before we get into that, Linda, I know you've said this before to us. I mean, obviously a historian, you're always reading stuff. So I want to put you on the spot. What are you reading right now, or what was your latest book that you've
read?
Actually,
I'm reading right now about Sam Houston and the creation of the Republic of Texas, because he fascinates me. He's the only American, and gracious, he's a Tennessean. He's the only man in our history to be a senator from two different states, governor of two different states, and president of a republic. So he's a pretty fascinating character. So I'm reading that here, and at my farmhouse, I'm actually reading a book about D-Day.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating.
I know. Well, you know, you have to have a book everywhere you are, and then I must admit I do keep one in the car for those days that I'm trapped in the sit-still traffic on 2475.
Of course.
I'm sort of hoping my friend Austin Garrett doesn't hear me say that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
We will say this: Austin Garrett is a friend of the show, so you got to watch out what you say.
Oh, I know. Sorry, Austin. I would never read and drive, but boy, you know, sitting sometimes you just need something to stimulate you.
Okay. So let's start off with Jimmy Hoffa. Tell us, Linda, Jimmy Hoffa's ties to Chattanooga.
Well, you know, it's a fascinating story. And for those people who do love to read, Maury Nicely, who is a local attorney and one of my historian buddies, has written a book called Hoffa in Tennessee. But it chronicles the fact that, you know, beginning in the 1950s, the government launched an attempt to try and bring Jimmy Hoffa to what they believed was justice for the corruption in the Teamsters Union. And a series of trials. There was a trial in Florida that had to do with his illegal, what they believed was illegal purchasing and titling of property using Teamster funds. There was a trial that involved him with Taft-Hartley violations, with requiring members of the union to pay dues that then would be used for certain political activities. Then there was a third trial that occurred in Nashville in the early 1960s, and that trial ended up in a mistrial because of allegations of jury tampering. That propelled a trial that came to Chattanooga, and it became sort of the focus point of the nation. Now, interestingly, most people in Tennessee didn't pay a lot of attention to the trial in Nashville because, unfortunately, when that trial occurred, that trial opened on the very same day that the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred. So, you know, everybody thought we were going to die. So, you know, at that point, they just didn't care about Jimmy Hoffa. But when it gets to when the trial comes to Chattanooga, it was a huge media frenzy. People, you know, media outlets came here from all over the nation. It's the biggest trial that ever occurred in Chattanooga. And if it were not for the history of the Scopes Monkey trial, it probably would be the most famous trial in Chattanooga or in all of Tennessee. And I think it's one of the things that propelled the late federal judge Frank Wilson into what most people consider to be a judicial hall of fame. Absolutely brilliant maneuvering as a jurist in that case, because it was such a difficult case. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So Papa stayed here in Chattanooga, and there are lots of people around who remember seeing him walking on the street and would see him, and he would give money to the paper boys. He would buy a paper from them, and instead of giving them the typical, you know, 2 pennies or whatever it was at that point, he would give them a dollar bill. So I know a lot of old Times, at that point, Chattanooga Times and News Free Press paper boys who remember Jimmy Hoffa as maybe being a crook, but a really generous crook, kind of a Robin Hood.
Yeah. So Linda, let me, I want to step back just, for me personally, about 20 years ago, I was at a surprise birthday party. And it was me and a bunch of other guys. We were in the front yard, and a gentleman approached me, and we started talking about the Belvoir neighborhood. And I want to say this gentleman that was talking to me, and I can't remember his name, he was the recent Belvoir Neighborhood Association president, and he was telling me about a house being renovated on Belvoir Avenue. And he said, you're not going to believe what they found. And apparently Jimmy Hoffa had stayed at this house while he was in Chattanooga. But when they were renovating this house 20 years or so ago, they had found all these FBI bugs hidden, like, behind the walls. So do you know anything about that, like where he stayed, how long he stayed here?
I know that part of the time he was at the Reed House downtown and then would walk to the federal courthouse building from there, and an entourage would follow him. But they very well, when they first brought him here, there are stories that he was kept in safe houses to begin with, because there was an awful lot of concern about his security, his safety, as powerful as he was, because he knew so much about the inner workings of the Teamsters. There was also a lot of concern about his ability to once again perhaps make contact with people who might be involved in jury tampering. And, of course, it's the jury tampering that got him brought to Chattanooga. I mean, all of it's a really fascinating story.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, he was sentenced to how many years, 13 years?
Well, he was sentenced to 8 years for the trial here, and then there was a trial following this trial that occurred in Chicago 2 months later for fraud and conspiracy, and there it involved loans from the pension fund in which the Teamsters got kickbacks and everything, and that he was found guilty on 4 of those charges and was given an additional 5-year sentence, which would make 13 years, but it was to run concurrent with the 8 years for the jury tampering.
Mm. Wow. That's
I mean, it's kind of fascinating. You know, there's this wonderful story when he was being tried in Nashville. They actually moved the trial first to Nashville because John Singenthaler, who had the Nashville Tennessean, was a very, very close friend of John and Robert Kennedy, and they knew they would get tremendous coverage there. Robert Kennedy was a personal and professional goal of his to bring Jimmy Hoffa down. So when that trial ended in a mistrial, Robert Kennedy had earlier been interviewed and said, what are you going to do if Jimmy Hoffa is not found guilty? And Robert Kennedy had said, I'm going to jump off the dome with the Capitol building. So when the mistrial occurred in Nashville, the attorney for Jimmy Hoffa sent a telegram to Robert Kennedy offering to send him a parachute.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously.
And that, they've often said that that had a lot to do with them then bringing the charges, because a member of Hoffa's inner circle stepped forward and admitted to not only Hoffa asking him to kill Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, but also for having given him the money to tamper with the jury that was sequestered in Nashville. And that allowed Kennedy and them to move the trial to have a fourth trial here in Chattanooga, which, of course, ended up with the conviction and is really still one of those cases that's studied in law schools across the nation. Mm. Who knew it happened in Chattanooga, Tennessee?
Right. Now, Linda, you mentioned the Reed House. We were just talking about this not too long ago. The Reed House used to have his room number, like Jimmy Hoffa stayed here. Didn't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of those things. I laugh and tell people all the time, we all sort of have this idea that we're going to run into Robin Hood, you know, the Robin Hood, the bad guy who is actually a good guy because he's robbing from the notorious and giving to the poor and everything.
Sure.
But there is something about the American psyche where we're fascinated by gangsters because I think we hope they're going to be Robin Hood, but then we find out they're actually motivated by personal greed and ambition, and it's sort of disappointing.
Sure.
But there is something when you look at someone like a Jimmy Hoffa and you realize, you know, so he's sentenced to prison, found guilty, sentenced to prison. He serves 5 years. Then his sentence is commuted by Richard Nixon in 72. And then, of course, he disappears mysteriously on July the 30th of 1975. And, you know, everyone has always assumed that he was murdered and probably is in the foundation of some major arena or stadium somewhere in the country. But yeah, we don't know what happened. So it's another one of those mysteries, kind of like a D.B. Cooper mystery.
Right, right. Ooh, yeah, ooh. That's another character we're going to have to pick
talk
your brain
about at some point.
So, Linda, let's go from Jimmy Hoffa. That is so interesting to me.
Too.
I love the Chattanooga tie-in with Jimmy Hoffa in Chattanooga. Let's talk about Al Capone, another very
notorious,
yeah, very
character.
Notorious gangster. You know, he... Al Capone, how old was he when he died?
Oh my gosh, I want to think he was only like 58. Notice now that I'm over 60, only 58 is so young. Well, but I think he was relatively young.
Okay, well, because all his pictures, he looks so old. But then he's...
I like to think it's the lifestyle.
That's what I would think
that
too.
That makes a whole lot of sense. His lifestyle for sure. So tell us about Al Capone's Chattanooga ties.
Well, his ties, actually, you know, he was headquartered in Chicago. He loved to winter in Miami. And, of course, the way back at that point in the 1930s in particular, the route between Chicago and Miami came right through Chattanooga. It was the old highway, you know, 41, mm-hmm. the Dixie Highway. And He was alleged to have often stopped in Chattanooga, but we do know that he had a place that he stayed in Mont Eagle. And of course, we kind of think of Mont Eagle as being a suburb of Chattanooga nowadays.
Right.
But you know, he was the most notorious of the gangsters during that Prohibition era. And there's a story, and I had pulled it yesterday because you know I love to go up to Suwannee and spend time up there. And it's a story about a guy named Pewter Garner who was driving along with his horse and his wagon. He'd been cutting timber. And he saw this automobile in the ditch, and he pulls his team of oxen over and looked down and said, "I'll help pull that car out." And when he did, the guy that was behind the steering wheel took out his wallet, offered him some money, and he said, "That's not how we do things in Tennessee. You know, we're Samaritans and we help strangers." And the guy gave him a cigar and said, "My name's Al Capone. Anytime you need anything, give me a call."
Wow.
Now, supposedly that's a true story. And what we believe now is the High Point restaurant that's up in Mont Eagle was a stopping point because it was the halfway mark between Chicago and Miami. And that was a private home at that point. And Al Capone stayed there many times. There are stories in the Mont Eagle history books about, you know, Charlie Shearer, who was the local barber, would cut his hair when he was in town. And the people there knew who he was, but never referred to him by name. There were stories that within what is High Point today, the house, that there was a tunnel where they could get out the liquor if they thought there was going to be a raid. Not a local raid, because nobody wanted to bother him there, but in case the revenuers showed up. I mean, it's a fascinating story about the tunnel that leads out to a little road behind the Rock House so they could get away. You know, and it's interesting to think about Al Capone being on Mont Eagle Mountain. You know,
which it is
considered to be the highest point and nearest to God.
Yeah, right. Wonder if he ever ate at Pearl's.
Well, you know, or maybe he funded Pearl.
It could be that.
That's true. Hey, if Al Capone came up to you and you kind of knew who he was, or and he offered you a cigar, would you take it?
I think I would probably very carefully not offend him.
Very carefully.
Cigar or no cigar. Actually, in current times, just imagine what a cigar that had been given to you by Al Capone would bring on eBay or something.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah, really. So I'm looking at a picture of Al Capone back in 1930, and this is what I'm talking about. So he just looks older than. It says here he's, I think in this picture, he's in his 30s. And he just, you see this picture?
Yeah,
looking
and
at
he's
him?
Just got one of those faces.
Yeah, but you're right. You're right, Linda. I mean, it's his lifestyle.
I just pulled up to look while we were talking, and he was 48 when he died.
Oh, he's 48 when he died. Okay. All right.
He just has one of those faces.
That's really young.
Yeah,
but
right.
He looks really, you know, as we would say in the South, he really looks like he's had a rough life.
Right. Hey, all my life, I've always heard about the, I think I'm saying this name right, Hotel Above the Clouds, what's now Covenant College.
It is. Where Eddie Fisher and Elizabeth Taylor spent their honeymoon.
Right, yeah. Okay, that's right. I had forgotten about that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so... Did Al Capone have any ties to? Because didn't the FBI do a big sting there when it comes to illegal gambling years ago?
I have heard that. Now I don't know if there was a tie to Al Capone or not,
okay.
but there were allegations that it was sort of a retreat for the wealthy who wanted to do, you know, during Prohibition there were lots of speakeasies and lots of gambling places, and if you knew someone who knew someone, then you got to play along, and. You know, that would be an ideal location because Heavenly, it's a beautiful, beautiful facility.
It sure is. Sure
kind of interesting that it maybe went from that to being a Christian college.
Right, right.
Good triumphs over evil.
Right. Linda Moss Mines, a local historian that's on the show with us throughout the year. We so appreciate your time giving us the local tie-ins with Jimmy Hoffa and Al Capone. I'm kind of tense, I have to admit, talking about these characters.
They were not nice people for sure, but they're fascinating.
Well, they are fascinating, and they weren't nice. And I have to admit, you know, sometimes when I say their names, you look over your shoulder and think, I don't want to tempt the fates or anything. And that's the I'm a good Southern girl with faith ties and everything, but it does make you a little nervous.
Yes. Amen to that. Okay, so you know how I feel.
Exactly.
Hey, Linda, thank you.
Oh, no, thank you for having me on, and let's talk history again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Yes, let's do it.
Hey, give us an email, a website, how we can connect with you.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you can connect with me email-wise. My email is localhistorycounts, all lowercase, at gmail.com, localhistorycounts. You can find me on Facebook. I'm the Barefoot Historian, and I put up videos and history stories on a regular basis. And, you know, anytime someone wants to talk history, flag me down on the street. I've been known to launch into great conversations on street corners, much to the chagrin of my family.
And that's why we love you.
We do love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
You all have a great day.
All right, before we go, we have to say once again thank you to our sponsors, EPB Fiber Optics. You know, they give you the best internet value in town, $67.99 a month, and it's only from EPB. Thanks again for listening to the James and Kim Cast. Share us with your friends. Email us questions. Interact with us on social media. And also, just give us a good rating as well if you'd like to. We'd love to see that 5-star rating, okay? And thanks again for listening to the James and Kim Cast.
And by the way, make sure you tune in to the James and Kim Show on Sunday 92.3, Monday through Friday, starting at 5 a.m. And we're on till 10. So long.